Fire here in just a few moments, and I'm telling you that so that you don't think that with some of the opening remarks that I tried to picture a barbecue here, and it'd be kind of a strange barbecue, I realize, if it was, but I'm just curious what we're having for lunch, and already kind of going there, you know, thinking about lunch. I don't know about you, but I don't want you to think about it too much because, you know, you'll get off on it and start getting hungry and thinking about, you know, maybe what you're going to have for lunch, where you're going to go or whatever, if you're going to go home, what you might have planned. I just, my curiosity about lunch, and I'm not looking for you to buy me lunch or something like that by asking the question. If you want to, I mean, it isn't for that. It's. I wonder if it's going to be the same thing you had for lunch yesterday. Now, sometimes we do that, you know. When I say we, I'm not necessarily saying you. I'm talking about my family. But it won't be the same thing that we had Friday and Saturday, I can tell you that. And it won't be what we had Thursday and Friday and Saturday. And, you know, even if it's your favorite food, how would you like to have that every day? And that's all you have every day is that food. Now, it's your favorite food, but you're going to have it every day. Now, the children of Israel, when they were out here in the wilderness and God gave them the manna, you know, the what is it? And that's what the word manna means, is what is it? And so we're kind of like, you know, well, what was that? Well, they were kind of like, we couldn't really tell you. It's because we didn't know what it was ourselves. It was, what is it? But we can tell you this. The taste of it was like wafers made with honey. Now, I've got a pretty sweet tooth, and that sounds kind of good to me. And yet, I don't know, you know, if that's what I would want to have just all the time. But they could take that, and they could eat it just like they found it. You know, right there on the ground, they could eat it just, we might say, raw. Or, as in Numbers 11 and 8 says, they ground it in mills, they beat it into mortars, they boiled it in pots, and they made cakes of it. And the taste of it was as the taste of fresh oil. We find Jesus telling the multitude when they were, after he had fed them, you know, from the fish and the two barley loaves. And they were saying, well, Moses fed our fathers manna out in the wilderness. And he said, well, it wasn't Moses that fed you that. He said, actually, it was God. It came from heaven. And so that description of manna was described as being a good tasting food. It wasn't something, in fact, it was from heaven. I don't know if that was heaven's food. I don't know if that's what the angels eat in heaven. I don't know if they really even need to eat. But in other words, it came from heaven. So, and since that's heaven's food, kind of like angels' food. And we look at that and we go, wow, you know, that would be pretty good. But in Numbers 21 and verse 5, we find that after a little while, even talking about how delicious tasting it was, they go, our soul, it loathes this light bread. We're just sick and tired of this, in other words. Now, Numbers 8, and in verse 16 of Numbers 8, we find that, and that's Deuteronomy 8, I'm sorry. Not Numbers 8. When I was sitting there looking at Numbers 8 and verse 16, I'm going, that's not what I wanted. But I think Deuteronomy 8 and verse 16. Let me look at it. I think that's what, that's what I wanted. We find, he says, now who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not? I told you. They didn't know what it was. So that's what they called it. It's, what is it? And so he says that he, that is God, might humble you, and that he might prove you to do thee good at thy latter end. that He might humble you and that He might prove you, that He might test you. And He says, now God did all that because He had good in mind. He wanted to arrive at a good place with you. He wanted you to arrive at a good place. He wanted you to be just what He brought you out of Egypt to be. And yet we find that the test for most of them was, we're really getting tired of this stuff. You know, can't we have something else? And God broke it up a couple of different times for them, you know, and gave them some meat to eat. But anyway, I think you're probably familiar with those events. That's not the purpose of our lesson. It's just to rehearse those. But to understand that God fed them that for a long time. And God said to test you, to prove you, and to make you better, to give you good things when we reach the end. So, we find for us that God says, buy of me gold refined by fire. God says, now, just like He had manna, just like He had bread from heaven that was suitable and nourishing and was adequate and met all their needs, you know, their nutritional needs, made it taste good, but nonetheless, it just became the same old thing day after day after day. But God said, you know, I still gave you good things. I gave you heaven's food. And I gave that to you to benefit you. Not just to nourish you, not just to benefit you, you know, physically, in other words, not just to help your body survive, but to make something better out of you. And we find that God, of course, here, as He's speaking to Christians at Laodicea, as recorded there in Revelation chapter 3 and verse 18, that they feel like that they have arrived. And they think, you know, that they are really doing well, and maybe that there's the possibility that actually, that financially, fiscally, that they really were doing well. And they equated that, they made that equal to, well, we must be doing this well spiritually, you see, in order to be doing, you know, monetarily so well. But God says, no, I have riches that you are in need of, and you need to get those from me. Buy of me gold. And then He says, with that gold, He says, you can buy the things that you need. You know, He says, you're naked and you need clothes. He says, so you can see. So that you can have clothes on, so you can be warm, so that you can be covered. And He says, so from the gold that I provide you, you'll be able to buy the proper clothing. And then He said, and you'll be able to buy some stuff for your eyes, because He says, you're really not seeing very well at all. And He says, so you can buy some eye salve, you know, and you can put that on your eyes, and that'll help you, and you'll be able to see better. And so God's not doing that just to make fun of them or to ridicule them. God's saying, I want something better for you at your latter end. And so there are some things that you might have to endure. There are some things that they were going to have to put up with. And we see that in order to arrive there, that God was going to have for them gold that had been refined. Now, the refining process is a laborious task. It requires several steps. It requires a lot of time. And we find that it requires, of course, a very hot fire. But from it comes forth the most valuable, that which endures, that which stands up. It separates the most valuable, the best, the most precious, you know, mineral from all these other minerals that are less valuable, that you know, really aren't nearly as well. But He says, once it goes through that refining process, you have something here very valuable. And so God had already, in a sense, refined gold for them, but in doing that, He's refining them as well. In fact, we find that what He's looking for in refining them with this is not just the most precious, the most valuable things, but the things that are valuable from heaven. Now, just like the manna came from heaven, He says this gold comes from heaven. And we find that when the children of Israel were building a temple, well, the tabernacle as well, but for either one of those, whether it was the tent or whether it was the permanent structure that Solomon built, we find that God had given to Moses a description, a pattern of what that tabernacle should be like. And he says, because what it is it's a replica of what's in heaven. It's a replica of God's dwelling place, of a temple, you know, that God lives in. And so we find here that when they build this temple, and that's what's being built here in 1 Chronicles 28 and 18. And David had been given a pattern by God as well from God, and then he gave that to Solomon. He says, now build it this way, because this replicates God's home in heaven. And so for the altar of incense, he says, he wants refined gold by weight, and gold for the pattern of the chariot. Even the cherubim that spread out their wings and covered the ark of the covenant of Jehovah. And so God required of them to put a lot of expensive gold as an overlay into various materials there in the temple. And it's kind of like, well, man, that's a lot of expense to put into a place that only one person gets to go into one day out of every year. I mean, who's going to get to see that? Who's going to get to enjoy the beauty of that? Who's going to understand how much value is there in this most holy place? And God said, well, it's where I live. It's my place. And so that's what makes, you know, it worthy of me. It shows you the value of me. It shows you, you know, how precious I am, my value. He goes on and he says, even 3,000 talents of gold. You know, the finest gold, because it's the gold of Ophir. And 7,000 talents of refined silver wherewith to overlay the walls of the houses. And so we find that some of that came out into just the holy place, not the most holy place. But even there, only the priest would be able to go in and see that, even though they could go in daily and see that. Speaking of Jesus, oh, I didn't know that we were, but we are now. But in Revelation chapter 1 and 15, we find that John is seeing Jesus. And he says here this image that he's seeing that we understand to be the Son of God, Jesus. He says, but his feet were like unto burnished brass, as if it had been refined in a furnace, and his voice as the voice of many waters. But anyway, he says his feet was like a burnished brass, like it had been refined in a furnace. So what we're seeing is that only the best of that which is the best, only the most valuable of that which is the most valuable of things that we understand here upon this earth, he says, represent really who God is. And even Jesus, in this image that John saw, in this representation of the Son of God, he says, you know, it was an outstanding image. And in fact, he says, even his feet. Now, I'm not going to show you a picture of my feet. Lucky you. Because I can tell you now, they're pretty ugly. And so, but even the feet, that's the point I'm wanting to make from this. It's not, you know, to talk about my feet, except just to compare it a little bit. But you know, our feet, well, it's kind of like over, you know, in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, when he talks about the different parts of the body. And he says, some parts are more comely than others, you know. Well, you know, I don't think of the feet as some of the most comely parts of, you know, of anybody. And yet even his feet is that which has been passed through the furnace of fire. In other words, it's been refined. It's been made, you know, pure. It's been made valuable. And so we find that man also must be refined, because we are the creation of God. We've been created in His image after His likeness. He's done that for us. You know, He has made us just as He is, in a sense, as from, you know, that pattern of what He would make man of. And we know that man fell short of that. Even though he was created in that image, we didn't live up to that which God had created us to be. And in order to make us what we need to be, if we want to be, in other words, people of God, if we want to be considered by God as to be, you know, related to Him, to be who He is as in His image, we see that we, like the psalmist speaks of here in Psalm 66 and 10, he says, "For Thou, O God, hast proved us, Thou hast tried us as silver is tried." In other words, in order to get to that point of being as pure as, or as being what we need to be, or just like that which is fitting to be in God's house, or that even which is fitting to represent even the feet of the Son of God, it's going to have to be made that way by going through a process of proving it, of testing it, of refining it. And so he says, we also then, in a sense, have gone through this refinement process. Notice Isaiah chapter 1, verse 24 through 26. He says, "Therefore saith the Lord, Jehovah of hosts, the mighty one of Israel, I will ease me of mine adversaries, and avenge me of my adversaries. And I will turn my hand upon thee, and thoroughly purge away thy dross, and will take away all thy tin. And I will restore thy judges as at the first, and thy counselors as at the beginning. Afterward thou shalt be called the city of righteousness, a faithful town." How do you go from being the enemies of God to being considered the city of righteousness, a faithful town, to being what God created you to be from their beginning? And that is like the children of Israel, to go back to what they were when God first, you know, called them out, first brought them to be His people. He says, well, it's going to take a refining process. Now, we notice as well over in Zechariah 13, verses 8 through 9, he says, "And it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith Jehovah, two parts therein shall be cut off and die, but the third part shall be left therein. And I will bring the third part into the fire, and will refine them as silver is refined, and I will try them as gold is tried. They shall call on my name, and I will hear them. I will say, it is my people, and they shall say, Jehovah is my God." Now, save all the deep stuff for Paul on Wednesday night while he's teaching these classes back there, you know, on the prophets and such. But I think, you know, what we need to get, and I think what we can see is, he says, in order to get you to be where I need you to be, as here I realize, looking back at the children of Israel, he says, you have to go through this refining process. Just like to get all of those, you know, worthless minerals that gold might have be, you know, infiltrated with. And to get down there to the pure gold, like, you know, you want to put on your finger, or, you know, as a necklace around your neck, or, you know, your earrings or something like that. You know, you don't want that to just be, you know, tin. You don't want that to be just iron. You know, you don't want that to be some kind of rusty alloy, you know, or some kind of rusty mineral, you know, do you? You know, yeah, you want that pure gold. And so God says, that's what I want, because that's what represents me, the best of everything. And so when they had been brought forth as a nation, created anew in God, and had fallen short of that which could be honorably called the people of God, God said, well, we're going to have to go through this refining process to bring you back to where you need to be. And so he says, in doing that, he tried them, just like you refined silver or you refined gold. And you notice from that, he says, the worthless stuff falls away. It's no longer there, the things that really aren't of great value. So we want to look at this refining process that man goes through, that we go through, that in a sense that God puts us through. And we're kind of like, you know, why is life so hard? I mean, you know, why is it so difficult sometimes? And why are these things confronting me? And why do I have these challenges? And, you know, well, they are, as we're looking at here, they are tests. They are proving processes from God. They're not always because of sin. In fact, we find that as we look at like Job, we understand that God doesn't punish us in that sense for our sin. But for the children of Israel, he says that I have to cleanse certain things of you that require, you know, a hard life. That requires some difficult things in order to make you what I need you to be worthy to be called my people and that you can call upon me as your God. Then there are certain things that you will go through in life that will challenge you. And for us as Christians, it's not really any different. We are going through a process. This world is not our home. This life is not the life that is eternal. You know, that was mentioned, you know, in a prayer this morning. So this isn't what God intended for us for eternity, but He does intend this to be a process for us to arrive at eternity. And when we look at this, we find that God's refining process comes in certain in different ways, different forms. The first form we want to notice is that He has challenging commands. Now, you realize this is for Abraham. This is just as an example. But Abraham, God told Abraham, He says, take now thy son, thine only son, whom you love, even Isaac, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains, which I will tell you of. So, we don't have the time to go through all of that event. Probably most of you are pretty familiar with it, if not all of you. But if you're not, you know, you want to sit down, we can talk about this. But for those that are familiar with this event, we understand that God was asking Abraham to offer up Isaac, his promised son. And we know the end of the event, how that God, you know, sent an angel and kept Abraham from actually killing Isaac. And he says, and now he says, I have proven you. And he says, now I know, Abraham, that you trust me. We have commands that in the latter end are for our good. But some of the commands of God may be just like that for Abraham, and that is they are challenging us. There are things that sometimes we go, well, you know, I don't know that I really want to do that, God. And God says, well, you understand this is a challenge to see if you will do it. Because, yeah, I know you might not want to do it. But I'm asking you to do something that you may not want to do. Sometimes we go, well, that's really pretty difficult. God says, I know it's a challenge for you to rise up to and see if you will, it'll accomplish it. We find that God uses a refining process, sometimes even of physical afflictions. We find here Job says, even today is my complaint rebellious. My stroke is heavier than my groaning. Job trying to describe, you know, how hard it is. He says, I can't. He says, it's worse than I can even describe to you. He says, I've been telling you that I would just have rather have never even been born to. He says, but that doesn't adequately explain to you. That does not adequately, you know, describe to you how I feel, how hard this is. He goes on, he says, but He knoweth the way that I take. When He hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. Job says, this is really hard. No one thought Job could even withstand it. His own wife said, well, Job, why don't you just curse God and die? Just let it be over with. But you see, God didn't challenge Job, and He doesn't challenge us because He promises us, like in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13, that He's not going to challenge us with something greater than what we can bear. I don't know that I could bear, and God hasn't challenged me with any kind of challenge like any type of physical, you know, affliction like Job had. You know, I don't know if I could, you know, meet up to that, but God knew that Job could. And whatever we are facing as Christians, however great that challenge is, God says, I know that you can, because I'm not going to give you something but what you can endure. And we go, but why, God? He says, because like Job could see, because in the end I'll be something worthy for God. He says, I will be like gold. And we've already seen what's in God's house. What's the only thing on earth that could represent, you know, the greatest value of what could be found in the house of God? And so God said, well, gold that is refined by fire, silver that has been refined, only the purest, only the best. And so Job says, I understand that's what God is making from me. There are judgments that we receive as well that are part of a refining process. Ezekiel talks about this in Ezekiel 22. And when he says, Son of man, the house of Israel has become dross unto me. All of them are brass and tin and iron and lead. In the midst of the furnace, they are the dross of silver. Therefore, thus saith the Lord Jehovah, because you are all become dross, therefore, behold, I will gather you into the midst of Jerusalem, as they gather silver and brass and iron and lead and tin into the midst of the furnace, to blow the fire upon it, to melt it. So will I gather you in mine anger and in my wrath, and I will lay you there and melt you. Yea, I will gather you and blow upon you with the fire of my wrath, and you shall be melted in the midst thereof. As silver is melted in the midst of the furnace, so shall ye be melted in the midst thereof, and you shall know that I, Jehovah, have poured my wrath out upon you. We find that even God's judgments that He makes, that He passes, judgments upon sin, judgments upon unrighteousness, we look at that and don't have time to develop, you know, and get into this idea, you know, about God's wrath and such as that. Because a lot of times people go, well, yeah, you know, that's just God. Yeah, He is an angry God. It's always angry about things. But even in this, he's showing here, he's saying here, that I'm doing this for your good. Even my judgments, the things that God comes up and says, well, now that's sin, that's wrong. You shouldn't be doing that. It's not because he's just trying to be a killjoy. It's not because he's trying to take, you know, fun out of life. It's because he's trying to make something better of us. And so even his judgments, even the things that he calls upon us and tells us that are wrong, that are sinful in our life, he's doing that because it's a part of a refining process. It's to make us better at the latter end, as he says. You know, controversies take place as well among the people of God. They rise up. There are differences of ideas and understandings and philosophies, and sometimes it's described as a theology. You know, well, you have a little different theology than I have. And what's really being said is that, you know, we're not seeing the Scripture alike. You know, we're seeing this, you know, different from one another. And we look at the Scripture and we understand that God has spoken what He has spoken, and He said, you know, that if you give it, you know, the energy and the time, and you look into it, He says, you'll be able to come to an understanding of it. And so much so, He says, that you can even all come of the same mind. But we're not always of the same mind. And we look at that and we go, well, you know, what is that? Well, it's also part of the refining process. Notice here in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 19, He says, for there must be also factions among you, that they that are approved may be made manifest among you. You see, even factions, divisions, things that arise over the Word of God come up to show us that, no, we're not all right. There are some things that are wrong before God, even if they are, you know, even if we believe that they are taught in the Word of God. And so how does God do that? He says, well, by these divisions that come up among you, even they are a part of a refining process that God hopes that we can go, hey, you know what? Yeah, I didn't see that way. I didn't understand that. I get it now. I thought all along this was saying this, and now I understand it's not. So that God can make us to be, what He wants to be. And so even controversies come up. Again, we find, as for us, that's not supposed to be challenging commands. We've already had that one. I don't know for sure what happened there, but it's my mistake. I made the slides. But anyway, persecution is what that's supposed to be. So even persecution, being picked on for our faith. Notice 1 Peter 1, he says in the first chapter, "Wherein you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you have been put to grief in manifold trials, that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, though it perishes, though it is proved by fire, may be found unto praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ." He says God even allows us to be picked on. God allows us to be made fun of. Sometimes even worse than that, God allows us to be imprisoned. God has allowed even some saints to be put to death. And we're like, God, when are you going to stop all this? Why are you letting them pick on us? We are your people. And yet God says, that's a part of my refining process, so that at the latter end, it can be good for you. Now, I know it's difficult to understand how all of those things can be valuable. So let me just give you some examples. Just like all we've done is looked at some examples. We haven't exhausted all the ways in which God refines us in life. Let me just remind you again. God refines us by giving us challenging commands. He calls upon us to do things sometimes that we might not think that we can do. He calls upon us to, obey His word in areas of our life that we might not think that we should really have to obey God in that. After all, I ought to get something good out of life. God says, I'm trying to make something good out of life from you. And so challenging commands do that. Physical afflictions can do that. God's judgments upon sin can do that. Controversies can do that. And persecutions can do that. And we go, okay, but really, is there any value created from that? Well, let's look at just a few examples here quickly. Over in James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, he says that we ought to count it all joy. And I'm just going to refer to these because I've taken so much time on the others. And so I'm going to refer to them quickly here. You can write them down and look them up. I don't have time to go through. Well, I've got time. I just don't think that you want me to take the time to go through and read all these. But I'll just tell you, in James chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, he says there, we ought to count it joy. He says, we ought to rejoice when we go through trials and persecution. We go, what? Why? To be happy about it? He goes, yeah. He says, because it'll make your faith steadfast. He says, it'll anchor your trust and your confidence and your hope in God in a way that you wouldn't have without these trials. And so it gives us better faith. Gives us a more steadfast faith to go through these trials. We find that sometimes it's difficult to go through, whether it's physical ailments or whether it's just emotional distress or, whatever it is that life pours upon us. We look at it and we go, why is that? Well, over in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 3 through 7, the Apostle Paul talks about there how that he can have compassion upon them and he can understand some of the things that they are enduring, they're going through, because he also has had to endure trials. He has felt pain. He has felt affliction. This is the apostle, after all, that prayed three times that this thorn in the flesh, whatever it was, be removed from him, and it wasn't. And so he says, it helps develop a heart of compassion. You see, when we go through things, certain things, sometimes we go, just nobody knows my troubles. nobody knows my sorrows. But somebody says, I do. I've been through that exact thing. It's like, wow, thank you. It feels so good that somebody understands. It's so nice that someone could. I'm sorry you had to go through them too, but Maybe you can help me. I'm still going through yours, through mine. Maybe you've overcome. How can... It gives us a heart of understanding so that we can have empathy with those that are going through their trials. Over in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 16 through 18, we find there that he talks about how they're going through this process of aging and we're getting older. And yet he says, our spirit's always young, always new. And he says, we're looking through eternity. And so those of us that are getting older and we're going through that process of aging, it gives us a new focus. It helps us to understand, well, like 1 John 2 and 16 and 17, when he says, you know, the things of this world, they are not eternal. God's going to burn them up. And he says, therefore, you know, don't get attached to the things of this world. Love not the world, you know, the lust, the flesh, the lust, the eyes, vainglory of life. Those are the things that he puts there. And he's showing us there that this world is passing away. And growing older is a benefit because it helps us loosen our attachments to this world. It's kind of like Scotty was saying this morning, even if we could live eternally here upon this earth, would we finally kind of get bored with it? Would even living eternally on this earth under these conditions, would it after a while, do you think, finally get to where, you know, I'm just tired of this. I don't want to do this any longer. And so, yeah, it's hard sometimes, the experiences in life. But God's saying, I've got good at your latter end. I'm trying to get you to arrive somewhere, somewhere that's wonderful, blessed, someplace that's great. And not only that, you will be worthy of that. I will have made you my people before I have refined you. We find as well that we can look at what God has revealed and what He shows us, and He talks about, you know, like where we have come from and where life comes from, and we realize that there are challenges to those things. But in all of these things, He says it helps you to discover your purpose. Why are we here? In Leviticus 25 and 23, God says, I made you a stranger here upon this land because I'm a stranger upon this land. And you sojourn with me. You see, this earth is not God's home either. And God says, so I want you to know that you're not, you know, a part of this forever. I've designed you for bigger things, for better things. And so we can discover our purpose from the refining process, the trials that we go through. Even as a church, over there in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 11 through 13, Lord willing, tonight we're actually going to be talking about those verses. I thought we'd just cover that idea because we have a lot explained for us already from this lesson, and we can look at that. But that's where Paul's talking about, you know, every man has built upon something religiously. He says, I laid a foundation of Christ, and he says, I sought to build upon Christ. But different works, you know, are burned up. And he's talking about those people at Corinth as a church. And we look at that, and it's just like the controversies that we talked about that we passed through, that God says, so that you might show that we are approved. We find that he says, this shows us of what stuff we're made of. And what stuff we're made of reveals who our builder is. And so he says, these trials help reveal whether or not we've been built by God or not. Whether this is God's work. Sometimes as a church, as a congregation, we pass through various trials. Like we talked about a moment ago, those controversies that was there at Corinth. And we look at those and we go, you know, that church was kind of messed up. Well, every church needs to pass through some of these at times. In fact, I believe that God causes us to pass through these at times. Why? So that we can make sure that we are God's work. So that we can know whether God is our builder. And in all of this, like over in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 9 through 11, you know, those are the passages where And the apostle says, you know, but the ungodly shall not inherit the kingdom of righteousness. And he goes through and he talks about, you know, those that are fornicators, those that are adulterers, those that are thieves, those that are, you know, homosexuals, those are. And he goes through all of these things that man gets himself involved in. And he says then, he says, you were that. Some of them could be named with some of those sins, just like some of us could be named with some of those sins. And if we can't be named with some of those sins, there's some sins we can be named of. And we're like, well, God takes us where we are. He takes us at that point, yes, but He doesn't take us there to leave us there. He takes us to make us something different. He takes us to fit us or to make us something that is fitting to be able to live eternally in the house of God. And so when he talks about that, what he's there in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 9 through 11, he's saying, I'm trying to make you a people that are worthy to be called the people of God, the house of God, the kingdom of God. And in order to do that, in order to arrive at that, in order to be that kind of people, we have to go through the furnace. We have to be refined. And then we can have the gold that's from heaven. We can have the values that are from heaven. Buy from me the gold that comes from it. And then you can buy all the things that are necessary, all the things that are fitting, all the things that are proper to make you a child of God. I appreciate your patience this morning. It's taken us a little while to get through this. And so I appreciate you being willing to make it through all of that. That might be a part of the refining process. That's it. I'm just testing you for God. But I also appreciate, because these are some ideas that it's hard to get through them even this fast. I had to really push to get through them this quickly. And I realize that there might be some questions yet that I think maybe, or I was hoping to be able to answer in the lesson that I wasn't able to answer in the lesson, or didn't answer for you, or that might be confusing. So be glad to sit down and talk about and discuss some of those things with you if that would be the case. But anyway, at this point, I appreciate the kind of attention that you've shown me. And also, I don't know, maybe it was the jets yesterday and Thursday and also Friday and Thursday, you know, Pastor Nora. I just kind of all rattled this morning anyway, struggling with keeping my thoughts together. So I just appreciate you being patient with us this morning, with us, with me, in our study. I would like to say that, though, if at this time, if there's any that would be subject to the invitation of Jesus Christ in any way, now would be a good time to accept His invitation to come unto Him and to learn from Him and to take His yoke upon you and to find the rest that's in Christ. I know we talked about some things this morning. It didn't sound like rest at all, did we? But there is that rest that is found in Jesus Christ. And He invites you to come and be a part of that. And so we as His people, we also invite you to come and be a part of that. And so if in any way you're subject to the invitation of Jesus Christ at this time, we would invite you to come as we stand and as we sing.